Yeah, okay. Great, I love it. I've not been up here yet this semester, so if you don't know me, we've not had a chance to meet. My name is Davis, and I would love to meet you. So, like, come up and introduce yourself after. But I want to start tonight with a question. Get those words right. Tonight with a question, and it's a really simple question. Have you ever done something dumb? Have you ever done something that you look back and you're like, yeah, I'll be honest, that just, like, really wasn't my best work? I have, like, a lot of those stories. I don't know what that says about me. But one I'll share with you guys from high school. I had just joined the soccer team. I made the JV team, and there were these older guys on the team that asked me to come and hang out with them. And I was like, yes, absolutely. I don't even care what we're doing. Like, I'm down. I want to hang out with these guys. I want to get to know them. So, like, I'm in. And so we're driving around, and to be honest, like, it was kind of boring. We weren't really doing much of anything. It is late. It's, like, 2 in the morning. And so I'm like, can we just, like, go home? Until finally, one of the guys gets an idea. He parks his car in this neighborhood. He gets out. He grabs his backpack, and he just, like, takes off. And so me and this other guy that are with him, being high school boys, we ask no questions, and we just follow him. And so for, like, 45 minutes, we are sprinting through this neighborhood. No idea where we're going. Until finally, we get to this random house, and we're, like, squatted down in the woods behind this house. And I'm like, what are we doing here? And then the guy finally reveals that this is the house of a guy on the soccer team that everybody kind of liked to tease. And then he starts to grab some of his backpack. And I was like, oh, the dots finally connected. We're TPing him. I've never done it, but it's, like, innocent enough. So, like, sure, I'm in. Turns out, what he grabs from his backpack was not toilet paper. It was a firework set. Not a little guy, like a grand finale firework set, like gigantic firework. And so immediately, I'm like, we're not about to set that off, right? Cut to, like, 2 minutes later, 3 dumb high school guys are sprinting through this neighborhood like the cops are behind us. And this firework set is, like, lighting up like the sun. Like, it is like that scene in the movie where you're walking away from the explosion and it just, like, consumes the screen behind you. But instead, it's just 3 dumb high school guys running through a neighborhood. It's so stupid. It was a really dumb moment. And I would love to tell you that, like, in the moment, I thought it was funny. That in the moment, I thought it was really cool, and that it was only later when I connected the dots and realized that it was kind of mean. Because what we actually did in that moment, aside from wake up this dude, was wake up all of his neighbors and all of the local dogs and cats and all of the local babies, which is somebody with a 5-month-old at home. I would be livid. I am praying that there were no babies in that cul-de-sac. But it was rude, right? And it wasn't like I didn't know that in the moment. I was totally aware of what we were doing. But I didn't say anything. Why? Well, I mean, I'm sure there are a lot of reasons that I could give you, but if I was really honest, I would tell you that it's because I wanted to fit in with those guys. They were older, they were cool, and they were kind of the first guys on the team to offer me that chance to fit in. And so I said, yep, that's great. Frankly, like, I was afraid. I was afraid to stand out. Because I thought that it wasn't just going to ruin the night. It was going to ruin my chance to fit in with these guys ever. That standing out would cost me my chance to fit in. And I wonder if you can relate to that. If you've ever done something just for the sake of fitting in. If you've ever done something because you were afraid to stand out and what it might actually cost you to do so. Why start that way? Well, because we're going to continue our series through the book of Daniel. And tonight we're going to read a story of some guys who are kind of in that exact same predicament. They have this tension between fitting in and the consequences of standing out. And I promise we're not going to recap the whole book of Daniel every single time we teach it, but we're only a couple weeks in, and I'm sure there are some new people here who didn't get to hear the last couple messages. So really quick recap of the book of Daniel is that it's ultimately about a guy named Daniel and some of his friends, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. No joke, when I first started working here, I had a guy in my small group. We were talking about Daniel, and he goes, I got to confess something. My entire life, I've grown up in church, and I really thought that it was Shadrach, Meshach, and a billy goat. It's not. It's Abednego, but maybe you'll remember it better that way. But these guys, they are living in an empire called Babylon. And the thing about Babylon is that it is not their home, because these guys are actually Israelites. These are people who grew up being faithful to the God of the Bible, but their culture, it was captured by Babylon. by a king named Nebuchadnezzar. And what Nebuchadnezzar does is he gets everybody that he captures to assimilate to his culture. He really wants everybody who lives in Babylon to look like everybody else who lives in Babylon. He wants everybody to fit in. But there's tension there because these guys, they don't want to fit in to Babylon because ultimately, like Nebuchadnezzar, he wants their allegiance. He wants them not just to fit in, but to give all. He wants them to be allegiant to Babylon. But these guys, they've already given their all. They're already allegiant to God. And so there's tension there. Babylon does not follow the same God as them. And so they have this tension of whether they're going to or not, whether they're going to follow the same gods, whether they are going to be allegiant to Babylon or they're going to stay true to their God. Ultimately, that's what the book of Daniel really is all about. That's why we're reading it, is because it's about learning to live faithfully in exile. Exile is just a word for being kind of away from home, living somewhere that is not your home. But that's not easy, because tonight we're going to see that pressure to fit into Babylon, it only gets stronger. So I want to pick up in chapter 3, and maybe a quick warning before we start. If you are following along in your Daniel book that we've given you, or just your Bible that you have, you're going to notice that I don't read every verse. These verses in particular are kind of long, kind of repetitive. It's all good, but we're just going to kind of hit the big points of the narrative so that we can keep moving. But let's pick up verse 1, chapter 3, let's read. It says, King Nebuchadnezzar made an image of gold, whose height was 60 cubits and its breadth 6 cubits. For those of us who don't know biblical math, that's just 90 feet. So this is a really big statue. And he set it up on the plain of Dura in the province of Babylon. And the herald proclaimed it loud. He's gathered all of these people, and then this herald is proclaiming, you are commanded, O peoples, nations, and languages, that when you hear the sound of the horn, pipe, lyre, trigon, harp, bagpipe, and every kind of music, you are to fall down and worship the golden image that King Nebuchadnezzar has set up. So this king, he builds this colossal statue. And to be honest, we don't really know what the statue is of. Some historians think that the statue was of Nebuchadnezzar himself. Some historians think that the statue was just kind of representing the various gods that they worship in Babylon. But frankly, it doesn't really matter because the issue isn't what the statue is of. It's what he's asking them to do with it. The issue is that he's calling these people into this kind of worship service. So he's getting all of his top officials, which includes Daniel's friends, and he's saying, hey, when the music starts, you guys are supposed to fall down and worship to this statue. The NIV and other translations, they refer to it as bowing. When the music starts, you guys are supposed to bow down and worship to this statue that represents all that Babylon stands for. I think a simple follow-up question is like, why? Like, why does Nebuchadnezzar care? Why does he care who these guys worship if they're already living in this culture? Well, because he's jealous. He doesn't like knowing that there are people in his kingdom who worship something else. He wants their worship. He wants to prove that he and his gods are better than their God. So now the circumstances have kind of changed, because to fit in isn't just to look like Babylon. This is not just the cool kids saying, hey, do you want to come shoot off some fireworks in the middle of the night? No, it's a demand to worship something in place of God. Now, fitting in means giving up on being faithful. Fitting into Babylon would mean that they are no longer living faithfully in exile. But that's not an easy choice for them, because it turns out that there's like a really strong amount of pressure, because Nebuchadnezzar, he tells them to bow when the music starts. But then he adds in verse 6, and whoever does not fall down and worship shall immediately be cast into a burning, fiery furnace. So see, this is not just like kind of a simple request. There's actually a threat attached to it. He gives them an ultimatum. He says, you guys can either bow or you can burn. You can worship me and live, or you can worship your God and die. And it turns out that's a really compelling argument for pretty much everybody there. Because you read in these verses that everybody falls down, they bow in worship to this statue, except for Daniel's friends. They stay standing. And what's kind of funny is that Nebuchadnezzar doesn't even really notice. It's actually these other gathered officials that point out to him like, hey,
Those Jewish guys over there, they're not bowing. Those guys who follow the other God, they're not bowing at the statue. So Nebuchadnezzar, he brings them up, and he actually gives them another chance. He says, hey, I don't know if you guys heard, but here's the ultimatum. Bow or burn, so like you should probably just bow, right? Bow like everybody else or you can burn. And I know that this sounds like kind of a strange scenario, but I want you to actually try to put yourself in their shoes. You're living in this place that is not your home, and you are trying to live faithfully to this God that you've been following for your entire life. But your city, your job, and everybody around you is just telling you to give up. They're just saying, hey, we're all doing it. Just bow. I know you guys follow that God over there, but we don't really do that here, so just bow. What are you doing? So the pressure, it builds and it builds and it builds until finally that choice, it's in front of you. Fit in and live or stand out and burn. Bow or burn. Which would you pick? I know it's kind of an intense question, but I want to sit with it for a second. I want you to actually think about it. In this scenario, what would you do? Because I think the reality is that this is not really just a hypothetical for us. I think that you and I are actually in the exact same boat. Because if I didn't thread this needle earlier, I think you and I, we're also in exile. We are people who are not living in our home because whether we know it or not, God created us to follow him. And yet, we live in a culture full of people. We're surrounded by people who are not following God. You know, obviously our circumstances are a little bit different than this. But I think just like them, like we look around and we see people in culture bowing to all sorts of gods. Things like money, things like sex, things like power, things like fame, things like pleasure or comfort or self or whatever it is. We see it in our dorm rooms. We see it in our classrooms. We see it in our fraternities and our sororities and in our jobs and in our city. Like we look around and we just see everybody doing the exact same thing. They're all just bowing. They're putting these things first in their life. And I think to be honest, like we're tempted to do the very same thing. Why? Well, because just like in Babylon, if everybody else is doing it, then we want to too because we want to fit in. I think that's kind of the underlying motivator behind all of this is that you and I, we want to fit in. We want to be wanted. We want to belong somewhere. We don't want to be the people who are standing out and are unwanted and are judged and are cast aside. We want to fit in. It's we do whatever we can to fit in, right? We wear what everyone else is wearing, and we talk the way that they're talking, and we hang out with whoever's willing to hang out with us, and we do whatever we can to make the people around us like us. If everyone else around us is bowing, then we will too, because we're super afraid to not fit in. But then, you have that on the one hand. I think on the other hand, you have this call to live faithfully in exile, to stay standing when everyone else around you is bowing. And I think for Daniel's friends, like that was literal. Like everyone else is bowing around them and they're standing out like sore thumbs. Obviously, that's not the case for us. I think it's a little bit more metaphorical, but I don't think I need to tell a room full of college students in 2024 that following Jesus, being a Christian, it makes you stand out. Obviously, it's such an obvious statement, but why? Well, because in a world that is bowing to money, we believe in a God that values generosity. In a world that values the self and comfort, we believe in a God who tells us to put others before ourselves. In a world that, you know, bows to comfort, we believe in a God who tells us to serve people. In a world that tells us to seek power and fame, we believe in a God who tells us to be meek and humble. If you were at church Sunday, you heard Jackie Hill Perry give an amazing sermon about the fact that God is holy. And that word holy is kind of a churchy word, but it just means different. It means set apart. The God that we believe in is different than everything else in creation. He cannot be compared to anything. He stands out above all else. And the people who follow him, who believe him, who do as he says, we're supposed to stand out too. We're supposed to become holy as we follow God. Living faithfully in exile, it means that we are going to stand out. That's not a bug. That's not an accident. That's not just like an unhappy coincidence. That is a feature of following God. It's on purpose. God's people are supposed to stand out. Living faithfully in exile means that we will stand out. But if we're honest, I think that's kind of scary because there's still that pressure there, right? There's still that threat that standing out, it means we might get burnt. And for us, that's clearly not a furnace that we're going to get thrown into. But I think what we're really afraid of is that if we stand out, it's just like me with those high school soccer guys. We're afraid that if we stand out, we're never going to fit in. We are always going to be cast out. We are always going to be judged. We are always going to be overlooked, and we are never going to find that belonging that we're looking for. And I think often that fear of standing out, it drives way more of our actions, of the way that we live, than trying to be faithful in exile does. I think for me, it's why I really avoid talking about God in my life, because I grew up in a couple different contexts where believing in God and following him was seen as really naive. And so I'm afraid that if I talk about him and I admit that I believe that he knows best, that the people in my life are just going to think that I'm stupid. For some of you, maybe that's why you still hang with the crowd that you do. Even when you guys constantly get up things that you look back on, you say, man, I wish I hadn't done that. Because who else? Who else is there? You're afraid to be alone. Maybe for some of you, that's why you date person after person, or that's why you're having sex with your boyfriend or your girlfriend, because you think that's what they want from you. And you're afraid that if you don't give that to them, they're gonna leave. And then who's there? Maybe for others of you, that's just why you say yes weekend after weekend to going out, because you're afraid that if you say no to the invite on Friday night, that there's not gonna be any invite come Saturday, that those friends are just gonna go make memories without you and forget about you. I think we're afraid to stand out because it means that we might get burnt. We might never fit in. And so it makes that choice, bow or burn, it makes it really hard. You know, we bow, we fit in, or we stand out for our faith and we get burnt. So what do we do? If these are the options, what do we go with? It doesn't seem like there's any great option. Well, I want to get back to the story to see how Daniel's friends responded, because I think that we can actually really learn from their response. Picking up in verse 16, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego answered and said to the king, O Nebuchadnezzar, we have no need to answer you in this matter. If this be so, our God whom we serve is able to deliver us from this burning fiery furnace, and he will deliver us from your hand, O king. So they refuse. They refuse to bow. They tell Nebuchadnezzar, no thanks. We're not going to do it. And to be honest, I think that that's kind of a crazy response. What's up? Like, are they losing it? Are they delusional? Are they putting too much trust in God? No, I don't think it's any of the above. I think that they looked at the ultimatum that Nebuchadnezzar gave them, and they saw through it. They realized that the options of bow and burn, they weren't the only two options. That's a lie. If bow or burn are the options we have on the table, there's actually a third option. That's to believe. And I know that that word is kind of vague. We use it a lot in church. So what do I mean? Well, when we say believe, we just mean to trust. If we're believing in God, then that means that we trust God. Trust God to what? Well, we trust that what he says is true, and then we live like it's true. So what are these guys actually trusting God to do? Well, they're trusting God to deliver them. Why? Well, because the Old Testament, it is full of God's promises to his people. God promises all throughout the Old Testament to be with his people, to go before his people, to protect his people from their enemies, to know them fully. And I think more than anything, he says that he promises that they belong to him, that he loves them, that he cherishes them, that he wants them. So these guys, they trust God to stay true to his word and to deliver them. But then I think they actually take it even a step further, and they add something really interesting to me. Verse 18, they say, but if not, be it known to you, O king, that we will not serve your gods or worship the golden image that you have set up. So they add that even if God doesn't deliver them, they still trust him. They still believe in him. And I think from the perspective of everyone around them in that situation, from Nebuchadnezzar's perspective, from the people who are hearing this, maybe even from your perspective, like, that sounds crazy. To say that even if God doesn't deliver them, they still want to put their trust in him. Maybe you think that's a terrible decision, that they should only trust God if they know for certain that he is going to deliver them. Because otherwise, like, they should just bow and like save their own skin, right? But I think that's like precisely the thing, is that they don't trust that God is just going to deliver them. They don't just trust what he said for them, what he promised to do. They trust when God tells them who he is. When he tells them that he is loving and all-powerful, merciful and almighty, and most importantly, that he is good. Because that's ultimately what it comes down to. They trust God, not just that he will deliver them, but that he is good even if he doesn't. That even if their story now ends in being burnt up in this furnace, that his bigger story for their life, that it's good because he is. I think some of you here maybe know that already. You've been following God for a while and you've tasted his goodness and you're like, yeah, I kind of have built that trust up in him. And others of you, like, no, thank you. I don't know God like that. I don't trust him. I don't want to follow him into any furnace. And just hear me say, like, that's okay. But I want to look at how this story ends because I think that it really does kind of motivate us into following God. Because the Bible, it tells us that Nebuchadnezzar, he is so furious that he has his guards tie up Daniel's friends, and then he cranks the furnace up like 7 times hotter than usual. It's so hot that these guards who are dragging Daniel's friends up, like, they're incinerated before they even get to the furnace. So then Daniel's friends, they like roll into this furnace. But what happens? Do they burn up instantly? No. They actually get up and they just start like walking around. But even crazier than that is that when 3 of them fall in, Nebuchadnezzar looks into the furnace and he sees that there's 4 of them standing there. It's kind of a weird detail to us. Like, why add that? Well, because this is a real story and it really happened, and Nebuchadnezzar reported what he saw. Again, theologians, historians, they're kind of uncertain about who that 4th person is. Some say that it was an angel of God. Some say that that angel of God was Jesus kind of before he came to earth. But again, I don't know that it really matters, because I think the important thing is that God is with them. He is protecting them. He delivers them miraculously, just as he said he would. When the options, they seemed like it was bow or burn, they chose to believe God. They chose to trust he would deliver them and to trust that he was good even if he didn't. And I think you and I have that same choice. I think when we're tempted to fit in because we're afraid what it might mean, what it might cost to stand out, we have a 3rd option. We can believe, we can trust that God is good no matter what happens. How? I mean, that's a big statement, right? How do we actually do that? Like, it sounds great. We like to say it on a Tuesday night, but like, what does it actually look like to go and believe that on a day-to-day basis? Well, I think we start by looking at the evidence, and not just the evidence of this story, right? We have the smaller story of Daniel's friends being delivered. Like, that's great motivation. But the rest of the Bible is full of stories just like it. But more than that, we actually have a story that Daniel's friends didn't have. We have the bigger, better, truer story of Jesus. Because Jesus, more than any of us, he knows what that pressure is like. Because Jesus, he hung on a cross for our sin. He took on our sin so that you and I could be reunited with God. Our relationship with him could be restored. It wasn't just this like instant burning in a furnace. It was a slow, agonizing death. But the great news is that the story doesn't end there. It doesn't just end with Jesus kind of paying for our sin and then dying. No, Jesus, like Nick was saying earlier, he rises again. And he promises that everybody who believes in him, who lives faithfully in exile, who follows him, that they're going to rise again too. That they are going to walk out of their grave someday, just like Daniel's friends walked out of the furnace entirely unsinged. We are all believers in Jesus, are going to walk out of the grave without a single scar. Sorry, I got worked up. I don't even know where I'm at in my notes anymore. Sorry, let me find my place. I'm talking about Jesus rising. That's the good news, right? That's why we're here. But I think the kind of further point of that is that we're not just talking about rising again. We're not just talking about getting to live again. We're talking about living forever with Jesus, because that's what he promises more than anything. It's not just that we get to live and go on doing whatever we want. It's that we get to live alongside him, that we get to be fully satisfied because he knows us and he loves us and we belong to him. That's what we're looking for, right? We're looking for somewhere to belong. And Jesus says that if we live faithfully, if we follow him, if we believe in him and trust in him, that we belong to him forever. Because I think, you know, we're tempted to bow, to fit in, because it's easy and it's immediate and it's safe. But I think it's also temporary. It does not last. That desire to fit in, it's not wrong, but we're looking for it in the wrong places. And I realize that like what Jesus is calling us to, it is hard. Standing out might mean that we get burnt. That's a real reality. We won't always fit in here and now. But the idea that we'll never belong anywhere, it's a lie. Because Jesus says that we will belong to him forever. That's how you and I can stand out, how we can live faithfully in exile, by kind of breaking out of this bow or burn ultimatum, and instead by believing that what God promises, it's true. And then we live like it's true, even when there's pressure. And when we start to doubt that, we look to Jesus on the cross and we know that he knows the pressure of living faithfully. And then we look at the empty tomb and we know that his promises for our life, they're true. He meant them and they're going to come true for us. That's what makes us able to stand out. That's why we can resist the pressure to bow, because our God, he is faithful to us. And if that sounds hard, that's okay. Because I think something interesting about this story is that historians think that it was kind of later into these guys' time in exile, like potentially 15 or 20 years into their time in exile, meaning that this decision to bow or burn, it wasn't just a one-time decision. No, they were actually faced with that question every day, in smaller ways for sure, but every single day they were faced with this option. You're either going to fit in with Babylon or you're going to stand out by living faithfully. And if they had just every single day kind of compromised in small ways, if they had just looked for ways to fit in over those 15, 20 years, then of course, when this pressure is on, when the furnace is in front of them, they're going to bow. But then the opposite is true, because if they, like they did, live faithfully, if they look for small ways to stand out every day, then when the furnace is in front of them, they're able to stand out. They are able to make the decision to believe. So I know that it's tempting in a college setting to say, sounds great. What Jesus is offering is cool, but can't I just follow him later? Can't I just figure this stuff out once I graduate, once I move to a city and settle down, maybe once I have a stable job, or maybe once I find somebody to marry, or maybe once I have kids, like this stuff's cool and I like being here on Tuesday nights and I like making friends and I like the music and I like when people talk, but I'm not quite ready to go all in on Jesus. But I think the sad thing about working in college ministry is that we see so many people over the years say that very same thing. I like what you're offering here, but I'm just not ready to start living faithfully. I'll figure that out later. And the really sad thing is that a lot of them don't. To prepare for a life of faithfulness isn't to put it off until later. It is to start preparing now by just making small decisions. So I want to ask you that question, just kind of up front. I want you to sit with it for a second. What's one small way that you can choose to believe rather than bow? Kind of a straightforward question. What's one small way? It doesn't need to be this big, grandiose profession of faith. It doesn't need to be that you just completely upend your life. But what is a small way that you can start to live faithfully and stand out now so that later down the road when the pressure is high, you are ready? If you're not all in on Jesus, maybe it's just that you come back next week, even when your friends are questioning why you're spending your Tuesday night coming to a church. Others, maybe it's time that you invite a friend to come with you, even when you're afraid that they're going to judge you. Others, maybe you just need to say no. You need to say no to a hangout every now and then so that you can spend time actually reading your Bible and practicing prayer and getting to know God and all that he promises. For others, maybe you just need to say no to the plans that somebody invites you to on a Friday night and trust that they will still be your friend, even if you don't do all of the same things that they do. Whatever it is for you, if you hear nothing else than I've said, please hear this. The way that you and I live faithfully in exile, the way that we end up rising with Jesus and belonging to him forever, is we start looking for ways to stand out, small ways that you and I can do day to day, so that someday when the pressure builds that you've been getting to know God and you've been seeing that he really is what's best for you. And I think the best news that I want to finish with as music team comes back up is that you don't have to do that alone. I think something kind of interesting about this story is that Nebuchadnezzar asks Daniel's friends this question, whether they're going to bow or burn together. You'd think that if he wanted to get them to bow, what he would do is he'd pick them one by one, and he'd have them look out at the sea of people who are all bowing. Like, it's literally just them alone standing out. And then he would ask the question, do you want to fit in with all of these people and save your own life? Or do you want to keep following that God that you say is going to save you? I think if he had done that, it would have been a significantly harder decision for them. But instead, he asked them together. And then when the question is bow or burn, when they're tempted to bow, they're able to look at each other and realize that they are not going to be standing out alone. They're going to be standing out together. So I want to finish by just asking kind of two questions. I don't know if they're both going to be relevant to you, but maybe half and half. First question is this. Do you have that? Do you have those friends, that community, those people in your life who will stand with you, who will help you fight the temptation to bow to all of these other gods, to just fit in with whoever's offering it? It doesn't have to be a lot. Maybe just like in this story, maybe it's just two other people. Do you have two other friends who are committed to standing out, to living faithfully in exile with you? Maybe if you have that already, then the question for you is, are you that? Are you playing your part in being that for other people in your life? Are you somebody who, when your friends, they're tempted to bow, they're tempted to go back to doing all the things that they used to do, or hanging with those other people, or dating that person that they really shouldn't date? Are you the person who's going to speak up? Are you the person who's going to encourage them, to remind them of the truth that they belong, that they don't need to just go fit in wherever is offering it, but that they have a better promise, that God's story is bigger and it is true and it is good for their life? Because that's what we get to do here. That's why we love working in college ministry so much. And I know we kind of finish this way a lot, but it's because we believe that it's true. We believe that following Jesus, living faithfully in exile, doing that with other people, it makes all the difference. When we're tempted to bow, we don't have to do that alone. We can do that together. We can stand out against the pressure together. Let me pray that that would be true of us. Jesus, it's not easy. It's not easy when it seems like everyone around us, in whatever area of life we're in, be that class or be that work or be that at home or be that wherever we live, be that the relationships we're in, Jesus, when everybody is bowing, when they're just doing what it takes to fit in, it's really hard to be the one that stands out. But God, that's why we don't do it alone. That's why we have each other. That's why we lean in to community, because we know that you've given us each other. But more than just each other, God, you promise to go with us. You promise to be that fourth person in the furnace. And you promise to deliver us. Maybe not now. Maybe that's not part of our story. Maybe we don't ever fit in because we're so committed to faithfully following you. But we know that in the end, we belong to you. We know that you are faithful to us and that you love us and ultimately that you are good. So give us the courage in small ways, maybe just day by day, to live faithfully, to find little ways to stand out, not just for the sake of it, but to follow you, Jesus. Pray this in your name. Amen.